It's inevitable that when you make up your mind to do something, something else is going to get in the way. Then you have to decide which is more important, the original intention or the new one. And when you're meditating, it should seem obvious that your intention to actually do the meditation should take first priority. But somehow you find yourself, after 4 or 5 minutes, someplace else, or after 20 minutes, however long it may take, you're thinking about something else. Then you get back to the breath, and then you find yourself wandering off again. So you've got to look into why. Why does the mind suddenly find the new idea so attractive? And part of it's simply that mindfulness is weak. The habit of the mind is that it tends to flit around, it tends to forget very easily. You have to consciously sow one moment of alertness to the next one, to the next one, to the next one, if there's going to be any continuity at all. And partly it's a matter of interest. If you find something's really interesting, you tend to find it easier to sew things together. And so that's where the second issue comes in, interest. We spend so much time being interested in our own thoughts that when we make up our mind we're going to stay with the breath and just be observant and not really think about anything. That goes against the grain. And to tell ourselves that our thoughts are not all that interesting, that hurts. It's almost like an insult. But stop and think of the things that you used to think about, say, 20, 30 years ago. Things that had you really fascinated. Do they fascinate you now? Not necessarily. You've outgrown them. And in fact, there's a part of the mind that's never really interested in these things. But we've gotten so used to selling them, advertising them, that we get upset when our advertisements are not taking any effect. And so this is why one of the most difficult part of dealing with the hindrances or any kind of distraction in the mind is recognize them simply as that, as a hindrance. And realizing you don't want to side with them, you're not going to fall for the advertisements. That the desire is really for something worthy of desire, or the ill will is for somebody who's actually awful, doesn't deserve any happiness at all. And when sleepiness comes up, you reinterpret it as a sign, oh, the body really is tired, it's time to get some rest. And you can think about all the lack of sleep you've had for the past who knows how many days. And that becomes part of a narrative that convinces you, yes, it is time to take a little rest here. Or if you're worried about something, it really is a serious problem that you've got to worry about, even though 5 minutes ago it wasn't even on the radar. And when you're uncertain about things, you're starting to have uncertainty about the practice, uncertainty about your own ability to do this. Say, yes, it really is doubtful. In other words, you side with your hindrances. It makes it difficult for any of the techniques, any of the traditional techniques, to work. And the Buddha gives all kinds of techniques. Just one is catching yourself and realizing this is a hindrance, coming back to the breath. Then another one, if that doesn't work, is to contemplate the drawbacks of that particular line of thinking. That it's getting in the way of your concentration, or if you were to think that line of thinking for a long time, what kind of behavior would it lead to? And seeing that it takes you someplace you don't really want to go. Or you can consciously ignore the hindrance, knowing that it's there, but let it be in some other corner of the mind. we can still stay with the breath. Or you can notice that when you're thinking about things, there's going to be tension in the body. Recognize the tension that corresponds to that particular thought, and you breathe right through it. When that part of the body is relaxed, the thought has no foothold. It goes away. These are some of the techniques. And if you learn how to recognize the hindrance as such, they work. But if part of the mind is still siding with the hindrance, you've got to learn how to ferret it out. And this is where the mind gets tricky, because it knows that it's supposed to be here meditating, so it won't admit openly that it wants to think about something else. So it resorts to subterfuge. And it has this little whispering ideas. Number one is, this is boring, this breath business. Much rather be entertained. You have to remind yourself that sometimes some of the best discoveries in your life have come when you were bored. The other day we were over at Palomar, and they were showing the pictures of the first sightings of those dwarf planets way out beyond Pluto, Sedna and Eris. And all it was two little tiny dots. One spot in one picture and then moved slightly in the next. That was it. That's how they knew there were planets there, for dwarf planets. Nowadays, of course, they have computer programs that will compare pictures like this and detect these things. But think about the time they were discovering Pluto. It was Clyde Thompson, I think, was the guy's name. He had to sit poring over pictures of the sky, flipping them back and forth, back and forth, to see if there was any movement. He did this for days and days and days on end, months on end. It was not interesting work. And yet he was able to break through the boredom that would develop around it and stick with it. And he found something important. And so part of the trick is, one, to learn how to make the breath as interesting as possible, but then to realize that there are going to be times when it's not interesting. You're not learning anything new. You seem to have hit a fallow period. And that's where you have to remind yourself, okay, when it seems like nothing is happening, there are two reasons. One, either nothing is happening or the mind is hiding things from itself. It's like those politicians that would have us believe that they wake up in the morning, all they can think of is, what can I do today for the public good? And they pretend that nothing is going on. Well, it's not just politicians. Every mind does that to itself. All the workings of the mind are hidden, because we hide them from ourselves. They're right there. They're happening right there in the mind. But we have this tendency to hide them one way or another. And so you have to remind yourself, when things seem fallow and nothing's happening, it's because you're not looking carefully enough. So instead of allowing yourself to get deflected by that thought of being bored and wanting some entertainment and finding your thoughts so much more entertaining, remind yourself, we're here on detective work, investigative work. The mind is pulling a fast one in itself, and you want to see through. Its subterfuges, see through its tricks, see through its smoke screens. And that's going to take patience. You have to sharpen your powers of observation, and you have to sharpen your will to be observant. It's like hunting. You have to be very still. and very observant at the same time, because there's something you want to catch. And this requires a shift in your values, because we too tend to want to be entertained, and we find our thoughts very fascinating. And our usual narratives are very fascinating to part of the mind. But remember, there is that other part that's just watching. And it's actually functioning all the time. You can be off in a nice dream world, and then something will jolt you back to reality, because there is another part of the mind that's watching for other things going on, and it'll detect them. And so you've got to learn how to highlight that part of your mind, the heedful part. The part that doesn't want to be fooled. That realizes you've been fooling yourself for a long, long time. And you'd like to see through it. Learn how to activate that side of the mind. The side that really wants to figure things out. Wants to connect A to B. When there's A and then there's B, well, why is there? Is there a connection? You want to see that. So you've got to watch carefully. Think of any skill you've developed that's required that ability to watch consistently. Like a potter who has to be totally concentrated on the clay and the movement of the hands up the clay, can't think of anything else at the time. Who can't let herself think of anything else at the time. Or the photographer has to be totally involved in the shot. That's the kind of interest, that's the kind of attention you've got to develop. That part of the mind is there, the part that doesn't need to be entertained, that wants to know. That's the part you want to activate. And learn the skill required to keep it going. Don't let yourself be fooled by all the old ideas, well, I need entertainment, or I'm just here for the fun. Because remember, the fun is not always fun. A lot of our narratives, a lot of the interests of our lives are things that are going to turn on us someday. So you need to cultivate the part of the mind that's immune to those effects. You need to develop the skills that you're going to need when you can no longer think about those things. I think of my father when he was getting older. His main pleasure in life was woodworking. And having that opportunity just to go down into his shop allowed him to survive a lot of issues in the family. But then he developed Parkinson's and couldn't be allowed near the equipment. And it really took a lot out of him. He didn't have that opportunity again anymore, and he didn't have any alternative. That was the problem. There was no alternative. So you want to work on the alternative, the part of the mind that can still function and can still take care of itself, even without the entertainment, even without the desire or the ill will or any of the other activities that we usually use to entertain ourselves. When you can learn how to highlight and activate that part of the mind, then you've got a refuge.